Good morning and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and joining us today is Jason Mazin. He's the Senior Director of Media Relations and Community Engagement for the Better Business Bureau, Heart of Texas. Jason, thanks again for joining us. How are you doing this morning?
I appreciate the time. I'm doing great. We're ready for the upcoming season of the holidays, and we're ready.
Oh, and that's why I got you on, because everybody needs these holiday tips. It's that time of the year again. The Thanksgiving's right around the corner. You got Christmas coming up, Hanukkah, all the different holiday cheers, and there's always somebody up to no good.
Honestly, that's the truth. Cyber criminals don't take a break.
Let's start with some holiday shopping fraud. Tell us some of these tips that you've been hearing through the Better Business Bureau.
Sure. As always, we appreciate the time. We're here to help businesses advance, you know, in their livelihoods. But also, we're all consumers at the end of the day, Mr. Arnold. So we all need to be mindful of
Jason,
scams.
Jason, you better start calling me Chris. We've been doing this too long.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. You know, we see so many scams. We see a lot of fraud, a lot of heartache out there. So a lot of things we see this time of year, especially our social media, misleading social media ads. A lot of times people get do these gift exchanges, the secret sister, those kinds of things. Those can end up turning into fraud, unfortunately, if you don't know who you're interacting with at the end of the day. We do see gift cards that end up being scam cards. They're duplicates. People looking for temporary holiday jobs, and those are the riskiest scams because people want to, you know, get some extra money for the season. We've seen shippers and delivery services that mimic the real deal, and they end up getting conned. And then there's always the fake charities and the imposter scams. So that runs the gamut of all the types of variety of scams we see during this period.
Well, let's start with the seasonal employment, the holiday jobs, because, you know, we are in a gig economy. A lot of people prefer it that way. They like the flexibility, and especially Gen Z and some millennials, they love the flexibility. So this time of the year, there's a lot of people who are getting scammed on the employment side of it. Can you talk about that just a little?
Yeah, I mean, the need is real. There are retailers and shippers that are hiring seasonal workers. It is widely announced. They're trying to get demands, and online or in person. These jobs are great for extra money, as you mentioned, but at the same time, they're not always what they seem. We have seen employers, fake employers, that ask for some type of upfront payment to get the job. They're trying to run a background or credit check. They say, we need money for that. That is a big no-no. That's the wrong way to go.
You should never pay. Yes, I want to hear this. Say this loud and clear, because there's people who are listening. You should never pay a potential employer for your background check, right?
Yeah. No legitimate employer will ask for money up front before you take a job to do training or application or anything like that. We have seen that. Yeah, correct. The job offers that don't require an interview, meaning you're automatically ready to roll. You're a top candidate. Let's get you in the pipeline. Those should be treated with caution. Your ears should go up on that. You should always interview for a job if that makes sense. Be wary of big money for small jobs. If an employer promises a great wage for simple tasks like reshipping, it's too good to be true. And we say watch those because it could be a fake. Mm-hmm. And never work for a company before they actually hire you. In other words, they say, we're going to pay you in 30 days for your work. That check may never come in the end. So watch for those slippery job scams.
Exactly. I think in a quote-unquote traditional job, they may hold the first 2 weeks, but not a month, and not bear with us. I hear you. You were mentioning some of the other scams or things to watch out for around the holidays. You talk about these gift cards that could be fake duplicates.
Mm-hmm. You know, nothing says good cheer like a gift card, and those are easy. They're convenient. Sometimes they come with fees attached to them, but scammers, they've been known to take advantage of the weakness by sending what are called bulk phishing emails. You get an email saying, how about some free gift cards? And we just need some personal information. They maybe use pop-up ads or text messages. But anyway, it's unsolicited. And what my key, Mr. Chris, when it's unsolicited inbound, treat it with caution. You didn't request information from somebody. So automatically you should be on guard or on defense. But if you open the email, don't click on links. Gift cards could come through e-gift cards or in-store gift cards. If you see a product tampered with, tell the cashier. They're trained to see, to spot gift card scams as well, but they could end up in stores as well. So just make sure that you double check that the product hasn't been tampered with if you're buying a physical gift card.
And can you talk about some of the people who are being scammed? It used to be, well, watch out, seniors. But I think there's a lot of people, Gen Z, might be manipulated as well.
Oh, yeah. You know, our younger consumers are tethered to technology pretty quick, and it's easy to swipe left or right, make a payment, and information goes out the door and, you know, it goes into the dark web, if you will. Mm-hmm. So, yes, anybody, everybody is vulnerable to ID theft at any level because technology goes a mile a minute. It's easy to fall prey. It's also easy to fall victim. And the quicker you scroll on social media or online or an email, the quicker you might fall victim to a scam. So, yes, everybody's vulnerable. Back in the day, you're right. They're senior consumers. We've got to watch for them because they're actually, Mr. Arnold, more savvy consumers when it comes to picking up a scam. They're more leery at offering information. Mm-hmm. They're more leery at opening their wallet up. So they're second guessing a lot of these scams. And our younger consumers are the ones that are falling more often victim. Maybe not the dollar amount more, but they're quicker to fall prey because they're so trusting with technology.
You know, I'm with you on that. My mother-in-law, she always runs things past me because I told her way back during the pandemic, she was getting these, your automobile, not insurance, but your warranty might be gone. Mm-hmm. And it was warranty scams. That was one of the big things. Is that still big out there right now?
It still is. They're getting craftier. So they're saying your warranty might be, you know, entered a gap period.
Yeah.
They've been claiming that for years and it's still floating around. But yeah, we're getting more savvy about that too. That's good. That's the good thing.
You think that people are more vulnerable this time of the year because it's the holidays and people are trying to look out for each other, or they seem to care more? Is that why people are a little bit more vulnerable?
I like to think that the reason why we're vulnerable is we have our guard down. We're doing a lot of things at once. We're trying to rush through shopping. We're preparing, you know, gatherings or food. And so sometimes things slip through the cracks, meaning you might get an email, you might go to the mall and fill out a form to win a car for the holidays, and that form goes to many different directions and you end up getting scammed, or you get all these robocalls and robotexts throughout the year because of that one entry form. So we let our guards down a little bit more during this season. Saying that, I think we're more giving. Obviously, we open up our wallets, we give to charity, we give to things that we should, and we do. And unfortunately, those can end up being scams as well. They can be duplicate charities that are set up to con us.
We're talking with Jason Meza. He's the Senior Director of Media Relations and Community Engagement with the Better Business Bureau, Hart, Texas. And Jason, we mentioned the robocalls. That seemed like they're just everywhere nowadays. How do you wind up on a robocall? And I mean, is there some tips? Like, I normally don't answer the phone if I don't recognize the number. It's got to be a name attached, or I will not answer it.
That's a good start right there. It's good practice. Your phone will identify even sometimes when it's a suspicious call. Even if it's a spam call, it will kind of be labeled like that. But yeah, mm-hmm. if it's a fishy number, best method is to say, you know what, let it go to voicemail. If it's important, they will reach out to me through voicemail or through mail or another method. But you're right. Robocalls and robotexts, they're just taking over our lives. If I knew the answer, Mr. Arnold, I'd be on a beach somewhere to ending all robocalls. I don't know the answer. What I can tell you, there are services, paid and unpaid, you can reach out to help control the robocalls. Honestly, those are for businesses that play by the rules and mm-hmm. have the opt-in, opt-out. They, if you respectfully ask to be taken off a list, they will take you off a list. That's about 90% of the calls. The other 10% are still going to get through. They're scammers. They're just putting a wide net out there and hoping you answer the phone.
You just said something important. If it's a robo-text and it's legit, they will say at the bottom of the message, yes or no to take me off of this list or whatever. And I think that's important. Pay attention to that, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And sometimes it might be a signal, Mr. Arnold. It might be you're giving the scammer a signal to say, yes, you're a live body. Continue the calls. So even those are tricky. So, yeah, you have to treat it with caution, even robotext and email, phishing emails as well. Yeah.
You mentioned the robocalls and phishing numbers and whatnot. They've gotten so clever nowadays. It used to be if I saw an 855 I wasn't sure about or something that just didn't look like a typical area code, I would never answer it. Well, if you get a local area code, you're like, this might be somebody, and you're tempted, but I have to be strong. I just do not answer my phone if it's just a number that I just do not recognize at all.
It's hard because now caller ID can be manipulated. And
what?
Your screen could end up popping up looking like it's the Tarrant County Police. It could mm-hmm. they could say anything on that caller ID to make it look like it's somebody you trust or authority or government, and you end up picking up the phone and it's not. So even caller ID should never be fully trusted at the end of the day.
You know, this is the holiday time of the year, but at the same time, something that happens year round because people order a lot of merchandise or food or whatever it is. Porch pirates. People are familiar with the phrase nowadays because packages left on the front porch can get swiped. Can you talk about some of those situations and how you can deal with that?
Yeah, that's the typical delivery fraud that pops up. People are expecting a lot to be delivered to the house this season. And sometimes the physical porch pirates are trailing the delivery companies and picking that package right up if we're not
careful. Is that right? Slow down. That I didn't even think about that. They're following the trucks.
We've seen it. They're casing neighborhoods. They're seeing which houses are not picking up packages quick enough, and they're doing their homework, unfortunately. And that is a local issue that thankfully our local law enforcement can pursue an actual suspect in the area. So that I think we lead to prosecution better for porch pirates, but that doesn't mean to say leave your stuff out for hours or even days. You got to have a solution. You can send it to a neighbor's house. You can send it to a locker. You can send it to your workplace. Arrange for packages to get picked up and not just left on the front, because they will eventually get picked up.
I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to let you say it. What about people who have mailboxes in their alley? In other words, the mailbox is by their driveway in the back, and sometimes packages are delivered, I guess, through the United Postal Service, and they're left by the mailbox in the alley. How can you solve that package not getting stolen? Is there a way? Should you talk to the Postal Service, or you just tell me some of the things you've heard?
Sure. It is happening. We've seen it with cluster mailboxes, theft with physical mailboxes. And you can start kind of playing defense by arranging an account with the Postal Service. You can set up delivery notifications. You can set up, alternate methods during the holidays. You can divert packages, anything to get it to not have it being left at a cluster box or a physical mailbox where it can run the risk of being picked up. So start that dialogue with your USPS, USPS.com, to start arranging delivery preferences, and that might help you out.
I'm glad you mentioned cluster boxes, because I almost forgot there are actually some neighborhoods where all the mailboxes are located right next to each other or tied together. Or like you said, they have a key that you open up your individual mailbox, but they're all like on one spot. And people have to be aware, if you're expecting a package.
This is year round, but especially during this holiday season. Yeah, there are some con artists that have gotten master keys, and they can open up, if not one, many, or the entire cluster mailbox. And yeah, it's an issue. It's an issue. It's one thing that, you have to ensure that you have that dialogue running with either an HOA, with your USPS, but you got to start the conversation quicker before it's too late.
You mentioned the porch pirates, and sometimes these pirates follow the trucks around. You ever have situations where they're stealing the food, like the Uber Eats?
That is a problem. I have seen that. It's not reported to us directly. The Scam Tracker kind of tracks fraud of other types, but we have seen, yes, they are trailing any kind of delivery service. Wow. They're on the hunt. They're on the hunt. They're casing, they're doing homework. They're looking at patterns. And we're also looking at patterns too. If we can identify something like a local driver that's delivering food or products or shipping, then we can alert authorities and say, look, we see a system happening in a neighborhood or an area. You should, send an investigation team out to check this out. But we rely on consumer tips too. You have to let others know what's happening. Don't just stand idle. You need to report scams or fraud. If you see something, say something, like the police say.
I got you. And not necessarily just call the police, like contact the Better Business Bureau, contact some people so they can be on the lookout and help do some things about it, right?
I think that's the best defense, honestly, is let others know in your social circle, even on social media. But if there is a potential for fraud or losing money or ID theft, let us know at BBB, the FTC. There are agencies in place to help bring this to light. And if you just don't say anything, that's kind of working backwards towards a solution. So please do.
You mentioned on the social media, there are a lot of different neighborhoods and a lot of different areas, towns and cities in the Texas area, where they have like a neighborhood watch, or they just have like a group chat online on an app for that particular neighborhood. How effective are those things?
You know, I love those. Those are the first line of defense for watching out nice. For neighbors. It's really a go-to hub for people that have been accepted into a group to share information back and forth. And honestly, to get in front of a potential scam, that's the best method, I think. If you can join, I've seen mom groups, we've seen, you know, student groups, mm-hmm. all kinds of neighborhood groups out there that are kind of alerting others to what others have seen. And I think isolation is the best cyber criminal method. If they can isolate somebody from the pack, then they go attack them. So staying socially connected somehow is the best method. Yeah.
I think you're right. And I actually lived it, something they got stolen, but a lost puppy. I mean, went mm-hmm. straight to the neighborhood app and they were able to retrieve the dog and everybody was happy.
That's the best way to do that. Protecting your personal information, spotting red flags, shopping with confidence, all that starts actually now on social media. So it's a new day. Groups are great. And honestly, just talking to people, talking to others, sharing your experiences.
Can you talk about those security cameras? Because I think that might alleviate a lot of it. And also, are you hearing any conversations or reports of security cameras that fail or how they might be manipulating those things too? I mean, I'm just curious because you're a wealth of information, Jason.
We get the details. We see chatter. We see information inbound about cameras that are set up to deceive or con. And I'm saying that because they can set you up. There might be a service company or a security company that's out at the stores trying to sell you a service. But mm-hmm. in the end, that service is either a fake or it's tethered to technology that could, you know, rip you off or even potentially spy on you. We just don't know a lot of times. We are seeing chatter back and forth. Yes, it's happening. You have to go with a legitimate security company, camera mm-hmm. company. You can look at reviews and complaints and just the natural behavior of a company on our website, bbb.org, does host profiles of those companies that you can kind of vet out before you get into a contract.
You mentioned the reviews. How effective are those reviews like Google or Yelp or, I mean, with any kind of situation, whether it's, you know, safety or even just going out to eat, how effective are those reviews?
Reviews are great. Reviews are a good litmus test for a potential company. You know, when you buy something, it's a handshake. There's always a handshake involved. I give you money for this service or product. So we want that handshake to be guaranteed or have, you know, some kind of protection. That's where Better Business Bureau kind of helps. Other companies are certainly providing great reviews. But just I would double if I were, you know, on the consumer side, just triple check you're reading multiple reviews, not just trusting one or two. Go to the bad reviews and see how a company handled a response. And kind of do your own homework before getting into a contract or agreement with a company.
Can you talk about, since we're getting towards the end of the year, some of the success or tough times for small businesses in Texas right now? Have you had any breakthroughs or things that are rather different with the Better Bureau, Business Bureau, with small businesses in Texas? Because, you know, you hear about a lot of companies moving to Texas, but there's a lot of people from Texas who are thinking about starting their business, and they're wondering if this is the right climate to do that.
Yeah, I mean, Texas is a great place for small business. 98% of businesses in Texas are a small business under that classification.
Wow, okay.
We can say that, but at the same time, you're right. We can say a lot of people still struggle with clients and customers trying to, you know, make ends meet, payroll, customers, employees, and then you got fraud on the backside of that. So we're tracking, we're looking, we're always trying to offer toolkits with Better Business Bureau. Whether you're an accredited business with ours or not, we're still here to help a business into its stages of marketing, of financing. There are loans, there's help out there. There's just a lot of stuff floating around, Chris, that I think companies got to, if you're going to start a business, whether it's a proprietorship, partnership, find out what the tax implications are for your business, find out where the sweet spot is, how's my product different in the market? How am I going to separate myself? And in the end, you know, what's the operating bottom line for you financial wise? All that stuff can be honed online. We do have a hub online at our website as well at bbb.org.
You know, this is we're going into the 25th year of the 21st century, and there's a lot of businesses that are online and there are a lot of brick and mortar small businesses. What's the mix ratio right about now? You don't have to be exact, but what have you noticed? Are there more businesses online? Or because when I think about Gen Z, I always think about the first thing they want to do is something online, whether it's an Instagram page or a YouTube channel. And then I'm also thinking about the traditional big brick and mortars. And I notice that some malls seem to be downsizing, but yet shopping centers still seem to be popular.
Oh yeah. We've seen the huge migration, especially during the pandemic, to online shopping. We've seen technology used to the max with now AI. We can generate scripts. We can generate client, assistance through AI. QR codes, we use that a
Oh,
lot. QR codes
yeah.
are a direct link for menus, downloading receipts and invoices. So the huge shift to online portals or experiences have moved. There's still a need for in physical presence stores. I mean, there's still a need for service companies to get out and make service calls in person. And yeah, the physical product, we want to touch, feel, handhold. We want to experience that. You don't buy a pair of shoes, or you try to not buy a pair of shoes without trying them on.
Exactly.
So that's kind of that still allure of shopping online, doing homework, and then going to a store for pickup or trial periods.
Are stores more successful in a mall or in a shopping center area, or individually by themselves? I'm talking about for small businesses. I'm kind of curious because, again, I don't hear about a lot of people going to a bunch of malls. They usually go to either a shopping center or, what do you call those individual shopping corner locations that have maybe an anchor to them, a big store to them.
Yeah, just depends on the product. I see so many great instances of businesses that take off with a simple kiosk or a booth at a flea market or a trade show, as opposed to paying a rental on a location. So again, the feasibility is there. Does my product work online only? Is there a service I can roll out in person? Does it merit me having physical space? So, I mean, at the end of the day, what does your product command? Do you need to have people coming through a store, foot traffic, or can you survive online? We've seen plenty of instances of both directions. So what does your service look like, and how can we assist you in that search as well? And we want to help you. BBB does want to help you with your physical online reputation. They say your reputation precedes you. Warren Buffett said it best. It takes 20 years to build a good reputation. It could take 5 minutes to ruin it, unfortunately. And that happens online as well. You have one bad experience or
Yeah.
customer or instance, and it could take your business down.
Exactly. It goes back to those reviews. But also, you mentioned like online. I think nowadays I found that a business's website is their business card. And a lot of people will go over that website before they actually set foot in a place.
Yeah, 10 years ago, I would have told you websites are kind of passe. They need to be there, but people weren't using them as much. But now with AI, there's so much content being curated and served up to our consumers that we need websites. You need a basic, beautiful, robust website, fully laying out your business. That way, AI and businesses can, or these search engines can curate and serve up the best information. People that are on the go trying to get information, these engines are searching, and a website will be the first place it bounces off of.
In smaller towns in Texas, how important is it to have a relationship with the Better Business Bureau? Because I know in smaller towns, you might have stores that are definitely brick and mortar, but they also have like trade days, or they might have special things going on where there's not the traditional, like in a bigger city where people just go to the mall or they just go to the store. They might go to a certain location because activities are going on that particular weekend. It's a sale going on. Can you talk about the relationship with the BBB and smaller communities?
Yeah, we've been around for 110 years. We're not going anywhere. BBBs are a resource to a community, big or small. In other words, if we're there in every community, every part of America. So it doesn't matter the population, the density size, or the business size. If you have a business, you have a presence on the Better Business Bureau. You have a shop waiting for you to set up a free profile. So again, that helps you in the reputation side. People want to feel good about making a purchase. They see what the Better Business Bureau has on them. We just kind of have a presentation of what you can expect when you do business with somebody before you actually do business with them. So that's what we're here for, helping small businesses out. We've been in the complaint business, unfortunately, for several years. People turn to the Better Business Bureau when they got an issue, when they can't get answers. They'll come to us and try to, air out the case. We're not the judges. We're simply trying to get both sides to talk. And so in the end, we're simply a resource. So if you're going to be out making a purchase, or you have questions about a business and you want to see what others have experienced, then turn to the Better Business Bureau.
I'm going to say it because you're probably not, but the Better Business Bureau is the seal of approval. If you see that seal anywhere in the facility or on the website, it's like, okay, this is a legit company. This is a legit business. And so, with that being said, I got to ask you, because it's towards the end of the year, the number one most reported scam of 2024 with the most money lost is, here's your drum roll,
Yeah, it's going to be for two different reasons. There's roofing and solar contractors, which is big in Texas.
Ooh.
Unfortunately, the most complained about industry, high volume complaint industry. And
Mm-hmm.
then the most money lost, unfortunately, is investment scams, cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin. People are losing a lot of money thinking they're, making money, and
Get
in the
rich
end, they're
quick.
losing it.
Yeah. Is it because they don't understand the technology, or they're just being tricked because people know that the investor doesn't necessarily understand the technology?
Both, and add another level to that. Simply the scam exists because people think they're missing out. The fear is real that they're missing the next best investment opportunity. So they invest, and there's a fake portal set up. Looks like you're making money. In the end, it's just a simple tool of fake portal generating, and as soon as you try to cash out, they're long gone. So that's the most money lost in the year, is the investment scam. Now it's moved to Bitcoin and crypto, so it's now totally online, unfortunately.
Are they able to steal your identity when they do those crypto investments that are fake?
It is totally plausible that your ID goes with it when you lose money, because again, you're releasing a lot of good, sensitive financial data, and a picture of yourself. So ID theft takes 2 to 4 years at best to clean up. It's a headache. It is a lot of heartache when it happens. So guard your ID like it's money in your wallet, like you truly don't want to let it go. Your date of birth, your social, even addresses, email addresses, really guard those, because there could be another you running around with an ID using your information to either get credit or see a doctor. You just don't know who's out there unless you check your credit reports.
And let's say this again. You mentioned Social Security. Seniors, like you said, they had been vulnerable in the past, but they're a little bit more reticent nowadays. They're a little bit more careful. How many Gen Z get ripped off because they just casually throw out their Social Security, or they think their driver's license is just an ID and they can just get another one, and all of a sudden they got hackers?
It's a problem that's morphing. It is growing. It's augmenting by the day, because a lot of our settings and our technology has personal data stored in it already. So when we visit a website, we open an app, and we share information unknowingly with that app. So a lot of that goes out the door right off the bat. I think Gen Z and younger and older consumers, honestly, everybody needs to be aware of what your security settings are, who you're talking to online, because there could be another you walking around with simply using your ID. It's been manipulated.
You mentioned in Texas, the manipulation and fraudulent activities of fake roofers. And you talk about how those scenarios develop and, the people who get tricked. And I think a part of it is, when the tornadoes come through or the bad weather, there's somebody that's up to something.
Yeah, North Texas sees a lot of crazy weather at
Yeah,
times.
we
So
do.
as soon as the hailstorms pop up and the tornadoes come in, we see the storm chasers, we call them affectionately, not the good kind, the bad kind. They're preying on people, saying, "Listen, we're ready to help you with your roof. We know you got hail damage. We see it. We're ready to take a deposit and start work immediately. As soon as you give money, that money's gone. The roofer never shows up. It was simply a company set up to scam you." And saying that, there's also companies that troll the real guys. They're just getting shirts that look like a trusted company, and they're trying to get in the door and get a deposit and run off. Or, in the end, it's simply a scam operation. So you really got to say, don't take that first knock at the door. Do some homework. Start with your insurance company if it's truly an emergency, and then get set up that way. And don't take that first offer at the door, because it could be a storm chaser.
You said something interesting there. You said that they will troll the actual roofing company and get their shirts or to pretend to be that company and rip people off?
Yes, you are correct. We have seen it in
Wow.
every major metropolitan area in Texas, where a company will simply act like the real guys, and
The
they
Acme
will
Roof.
show up.
We're Acme Roof, and they're not
Acme
Acme.
Roof.
And they're not.
Exactly. They will show up with the shirts, with a logo, like a magnetic sign that they put on their own vehicle. And unfortunately, we've caught the real company gets dinged, because they're the ones that get the call unknowingly that somebody's mimicking their company or posing as them. So yeah, it's happening.
It's so crazy how, again, people get manipulated with misinformation. They get manipulated with possible hackers. But now is the time of the year to be aware and have your spidey senses up, your guards up, and just be able to do the things that you normally do. But also, like you said, because a lot of people are multitasking right now because it's the holidays, you really, really have to be a little bit more careful and slow down. Is there any other holiday kind of tips you want to make sure people are aware of before we let you go?
I think the main things are just know who you're dealing with. If you decide to shop for Black Friday, for the holidays, just read the fine print, check the reviews of a company, you know, plan the excursions, sign up for the rewards programs of businesses. That way you get them directly from a business and not a potential scammer. Return policies, warranties, those are a big issue. Everybody wants a guarantee, but is a company ready to stand behind a product or a service? And that's what we're here for. If you see something in that area, let us know. Contact the Better Business Bureau online anytime, bbb.org. That's bbb.org.
He is Jason Mesa. He's the Senior Director of Media Relations and Community Engagement, Heart of Texas, Better Business Bureau. Jason, it's always a pleasure. We're going to get you back on again the beginning of next year and let people know what they can look forward to and also to watch out for.
Always a treat, Chris. Y'all stay safe.
You too. And joining us now is Lucas Shipman. He is the Chief Development Officer of Happy Hills Farm. He's my buddy. And You've got a big event coming up this month. We want everybody to know about the greatness of Happy Hills Farms. And by the way, thank you again for joining us as often.
Chris, thanks for having me back on. Excited to talk about Happy Hill Farm and just share the good work that we've been doing with more folks on your show.
For those who don't know, Happy Hills Farm is a unique working farm and campus that provides academics, spiritual development, sports, music, and arts programs for children in need from all over the world. And it's located right there between Granberry and Glen Rose. Did I get that right?
Yes, sir. Two great towns. We're happy to be between them. And my grandfather started it in 1975. So we're actually going into this year, we're going into our 50th year of helping kids. And it's just a really special place. We're on 500 acres, the fully working farm, K through 12th grade school, kids from all over the world. You know, a lot of people have heard of us because of our great relationship we have with the Dallas Cowboys, but maybe not know what we do or what kind of kids we help. And what they all have in common is two things. They're really high potential kids. They're driven, they're smart, but they're coming out of low opportunity situations. And so what Happy Hill Farm has been doing for 50 years is just filling in that opportunity gap so they can do the extracurriculars they couldn't back home, get the great education they couldn't get back home. And through that, you know, we see them grow up to be all God made them to be.
It's an amazing journey. And again, the facility is absolutely amazing. And to think it started out of a mobile home. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. When you think about it, just like you said, almost 50 years ago.
Yeah. So my grandfather was a faithful minister and the marshal in Somerville County dropped off two young girls at his doorstep and said, "Hey, you're the preacher in town, figure it out." Since then, we've had, you know, thousands of faithful friends and donors step up to provide, to really turn 250 acres full of mesquite into now 500 acres of a beautiful campus. I mean, it looks like a university campus, 4.5 miles of road, you know, our own wells. I mean, it's a mini city. And it's incredible that, you know, we've been able to do it as well. And all of our donors and friends know this. We've been able to do it without a penny of state or federal tax money. And we're not a United Way agency, which means that our budget is met every year by faithful friends and donors providing directly for the children.
That is fantastic. And again, you mentioned the property. It is absolutely beautiful. It's got everything that students could use and need and learn from in a tranquil environment. And we mentioned you guys are right there between Glen Rose and Granberry. You got so many different things out there. You got animals on the property. I got a question I've been meaning to ask you for years. Lucas.
Yeah.
Do you have a dinosaur on the property? Are there bones, tar pits? Because they're out there. Everybody knows about them in that Glen Rose, Granberry area.
Let me tell you, we are about a mile and a half from the actual town of Glen Rose, you know, where Dinosaur Valley State Park, where they have the really famous dinosaur tracks that you can step in, you can put your foot in and walk along the river there when it's dry during the dry season. You know, we've never discovered any. We've looked. we're kind of in that valley, you know, where they probably walked around. But, you know, it's fun to be in that area. Those two towns are great. A lot of people drive down to go to the Granbury Square or go to the Promise, that, you know, Christian production in Glenrose, or to, mm-hmm. you know, see the dinosaur tracks. And so we've got people driving past the property, the school, on 144 all the time. And so I love opportunities like this where, you know, a lot of people have driven past and not know what we're about, and I get to tell them about it.
Can you talk about how some of the kids wind up being enrolled there and staying in the whole nine yards? Because the process is very, very good, but it's also interesting how you're able to help so many families in that way.
Yeah. So we have a long, long waiting list, always have for mm-hmm. years. I mean, we can, the school is about a little over 100 students, and that's mostly kids that we call residential boarding kids. So they're there, staying there on campus. And then we have a select number of kids who are driving in from the community or are on the bus, our bus that goes out, or are brought by their parents or guardian. And so, yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, you know, high potential, low opportunity. This is what we're trying to do. If you drove on our campus, you know, it would look like a legacy boarding school that you would see in the Northeast, mm-hmm. you know, that's now second, third, fourth generation wealthy families. It looks like that, but we do the very opposite of it. These are kids that under no circumstances would get these kinds of opportunities, would get this kind of education. And we're able, with God's help and a lot of good donors, to provide that to them. And so for them, it's life-changing. You just talked about the property. A lot of them are coming out of, you know, pretty poor urban environments. To be mm-hmm. able to get out on a 500-acre property where they can throw the football around and walk around at night and see the stars. Not a lot of light pollution. You know, mm-hmm. Granbury and Glenrose are growing, but not a lot of light pollution. They can see everything. They can be out there. It's safe. They don't have to really worry about, you know, who they're going to trust or where their next meal is going to come from. It's safe and structured and good and built on the traditional family model. And so it's just it's a life-changing opportunity, and we're really blessed to be able to provide it to so many kids.
You also have, beyond the education, they have little chores to do around there. You were talking about that one time. I thought that was also fascinating because it's a lifestyle. It also helps kids know that, guess what? You can actually have an interesting life. There's an opportunity. In other words, the environment that you were living in initially is not the way of the entire world.
No. So much of life, I mean, we know this, so much of life is what you make of it, right?
Exactly.
And so we get kids into an environment. We don't have dorms. That's another thing that's really unique about Happy Hill Farm. We've never had dorms. We have homes. They're, mm-hmm. they're called residences. And so it's eight boys or eight girls in a house with a set of resident parents. A mom and a dad that their only job is to care for those kids. They're there to help them with homework. They're there to help them with their emotional and spiritual needs. They're there to help them work through friendship and growing up and doing their extracurricular activities and excelling in sports and being where they're supposed to be on time. Mm-hmm. Everything a mom and dad does in regular life. And so they thrive in that environment because they get seven brothers or seven sisters and they do everything as a house. So they've got a passenger van that they go out on the weekends in together. They eat together at mm-hmm. night in our dining center together as a residence, as a house. And so that's been a huge part of it. You know, if you cram 25 kids in a dorm with somebody just a few years older than them,
yeah,
to watch them, it's just not the same kind of life change as a family. And you talked about chores and things to do. I mean, yeah, the expectation is, you know, they're responsible for their space, not anybody else's, but they're responsible for their space. And so, you know, they keep it tidy. They keep it clean. The resident parent's job is not to clean and to cook. You know, the kids do that. And then we have a dining center that provides almost every meal other than breakfast and Saturday night dinner. And so they get those experiences of, yeah, I actually have agency. I can get my homework done. Right. I can keep my space clean. I can excel in the sport. I have value. I have worth. I have dignity. And that kind of structure to a kid that's got potential is just, we see exponential growth in their life. And so many leaders come out of Happy Hill Farm.
It's so funny you mentioned that because I've always felt that way. And that's the way I raise my kids too. It's like, if you have something to look forward to and you actually check things off the box, like I got my room cleaned up, I was able to take the trash out, the little things yep. like that, it shows that you can be productive. And when you feel like you're productive, you have a purpose-driven life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what it's all about. That's what we're teaching them, you know, that God gave them gifts. Mm-hmm. He has a path for them. They have the ability. And now, because of the wonderful donors of Happy Old Farm, they've got all the opportunities they need to actually see that through. So they're going to be able to go to college. 99% of our kids are accepted into a university before they leave. Most of them go to those schools. Some go into mm-hmm. trade school, some go into the military, but the vast majority go to college. The vast majority, they're the first generation in their family mm-hmm. to be able to go to college. And, you know, that kind of educational advancement, that relational advancement that they get living in a house, you know, being actually cared for, our student to teacher ratio is 10 to 12 to 1. So very low. So the teachers can give them the kind of attention they need. They just thrive in that kind of environment.
Okay. We talked about the environment. Let's talk about the kids just a little bit more, because you mentioned yeah. the waiting list, and you mentioned some kids are from backgrounds that they had never been in a farm situation before. They've never mm-hmm. been in a situation where there's a positive outcome expected, or a positive outcome could happen. Can you talk about some, not the requirements, but some of the intangibles that you look for when you select the kids that are, you know, able to attend the school and be out there at Happy Hill Farm? Because I'm wondering if it has anything to do with the IQ, or you see something, yeah. and, you know, something about them. This kid looks like all they need is an opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really what it is. It's that we're trying to identify the kids that already have sort of the firewood in the campfire ready to go, and they just need gas and a match.
Yeah.
And that's what we provide. And so some of it is, you know, educational and academic requirements. You know, all of our kids are up or above their grade level. They're testing okay. Sometimes we've got kids with educational challenges, but that runs the gamut nowadays, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's got something.
Right.
And so that we're looking for those kind of requirements, but it really is the intangibles. It really is, I'll give you an example. Like, when we're talking to a young lady in Western Africa, mm-hmm. is the opportunity for her to come here, is that the defining kind of moment in her life where the branch of her family tree goes another direction? You know, she's got a great set of parents or grandparents that are caring for her, but she just can't get educated because she has to work at home. So can we put her in an environment where she doesn't have to work to provide for her family, where she can go to school during the regular school day, where she can play volleyball for the first time, where she can have a show animal or do floriculture and create floral arrangements or whatever? Can we give her enough opportunities that she finds that thing that God has gifted her in that just creates that exponential growth in her life? And those are the kids that we're trying to identify. Our system works. We've put out thousands of graduates. It works so well because the kids want to be there. You know, we're not, you know, a lot of people think, well, is it a military school? Is it a mental health care facility? No bars on the windows.
Yeah.
All the kids want to be there. They mm-hmm. recognize the opportunity they've been given, and we're blessed to get so many great kids that they take advantage of those opportunities. So it's that intangible opportunity gap that we're looking for, that is that gasoline and fire.
With this being in Texas, you know, people love Longhorn steers. They love
yeah.
horses. They love old rabbits and chickens and everything you'd like yep. to see on a farm in Texas. So I'm understanding you've got the 4-H and the FFA programs going on, and it helps with the kids with their self-confidence. Can you talk about the fact that they actually interact with a lot of the animals? And you know what? I think people found out during the pandemic that there are a lot of care animals, animals that help people cope, animals that help yeah. people relax and understand balance in their lives. Can you talk about the fundamental fact that you have farm animals, including those longhorns, that kids mm-hmm. actually interact with, and horses that they could ride.
Yeah, I mean, all interaction with animals is therapeutic, in my opinion, even if it's not like a certified therapeutic program. If you're on the back of a horse, you're trying to accomplish where you want it to go, at what speed you want it to go. That takes so much skill that you have to grow, but also there's just so much responsibility. Mm-hmm. Having something that's dependent on you for you to care for it is a great way to mature a person, right? It's why a lot of us, me included, were knuckleheads before we had kids, right?
Oh, and yeah. Didn't your mom always say, you need to have a family?
Yeah.
You need to get married.
Exactly right.
Yep.
Man, you got something you need to settle down. On you to.
Yeah, you got to settle down.
That's right. That's right. That's what I needed. And so you got something that's dependent on you, and that sense of responsibility, if you got any holdover entitlement, man, that goes away. That'll mm-hmm. humble you real quick.
Oh yeah.
Having an animal. And so the ones that participate in that, that's what we see. We see just such a growth in their maturity and their patience and their ability to make good decisions and to plan things out. And we do. We have a great equestrian program. And even right now, we have some kids that are coming from off our campus that have had some really challenging moments in their life so far, really challenging. And they are in our horsemanship, in our equestrian program as the therapeutic program. So they're just there once a week to learn, hey, here's where I stand. Here's how to do the tack. Here's how to get on the animal. Here's how to ride the animal. And the growth that we're seeing in their life, that's just one of the services that, you know, we provide people that aren't even in our program. And so we're just blessed. We're blessed to have the property that we have, the animals that we have, to see kids connect. It's just a great way for them to grow and mature. And then all the kids that are involved in ag, it's a huge scholarship opportunity. I mean, so many of them throughout our 50 years, hundreds, if not thousands, have gone to Tech and A&M and many places on ag and 4-H scholarships.
Fantastic. We're talking with Lucas Shipman. He is the chief development officer at Happy Hills Farm. And Lucas, I guess the kids are ages 6 through 18. We've talked about this before. How many years do the kids usually stay? Some of them go from start to finish, but how many years on average do the kids stay? And what are some of the reasons they move on other than to go off to college or go off to, you know, whatever life has for them?
Yeah, the average stay is 3 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. We have some younger kids. We, like you mentioned, some of our greatest stories are our student of alumni, our students that were dropped off at 5 mm-hmm. and then graduated with us at 18. Some incredible one I can think is a doctor now. It actually was our first physician, an incredible young man, first generation African immigrant, couldn't speak any English. His mom brought him at 5 because of a connection through a church in Dallas. And mm-hmm. he was with us till he graduated. And now he's almost 30 and just an incredible young man. And so those stories do happen. The average though is 3 to 4 years. And it's really because there's usually a point in a kid's life where it's kind of hit a critical mass. They're identified by their school as, you know, maybe needing some more structure. Maybe mm-hmm. their family realizes, hey, I'd like to get them out of this environment that they're in right now, the neighborhood we're in or the school district we're in. And they contact us and we identify them and get them in our program. We have a lot of kids show up in 7th and 8th grade and stay through graduation. That's probably the most common kind of age is middle school through graduation.
And you mentioned the kids from around the world. Name some of the places and also how do they wind up here in Texas? Because I think that's so impressive because you got a cornucopia, you got an entire kaleidoscope of cultures all in one location.
Yeah, I mean, we're really blessed. We finished a new school in 2008 and it was a little bit larger than we actually had capacity for. And so we built some more residences, some more homes. and decided to open up our program to international kids, the same types of students that we were helping domestically here in the United States. High potential, low opportunity. So we connected with some pastors, some social workers, some coaches in countries like Rwanda and Ukraine and Serbia and Montenegro and Brazil and Mexico. And we started to identify the same kinds of kids. What's that last opportunity step that they need? You know, maybe they're a really skilled athlete and they'd love to come to the United States and see if they can get an athletic scholarship to go to college. Come to Happy Hill Farm. Maybe they're really bright and driven, and maybe they're a gal and they're from, you know, Western Africa, where they're just not going to get the opportunity they deserve. They're not going to get treated how they deserve. They want to come to America and really experience the American dream. And we get them here and they go to an American university and their life totally changes. And so, yeah, those are some of the countries that we've been able to get kids from. And that's been pretty consistent throughout the last 10 years. And so that creates an environment where they're ready for college, because every college campus is global now. You got kids from everywhere, all kinds of faiths and worldviews and languages, and they're used to that. That's in that house of eight, you know, maybe half of them are from another country. And so they hear other languages and other perspectives. And it's so great for our American kids. The international kids usually come a little more hungry and a little more ready to embrace that opportunity and grab it by the horns, so to speak. And some of our American kids are a little behind that, and they see the fire in the belly of some of these international kids, and then they're able to match it. So it's really good for our American kids.
When we first started the conversation, you mentioned the Dallas Cowboys. Can you talk about the Cowboys connection? Because, again, a lot of people may have heard of Happy Hill Farm through some kind of association with the Dallas Cowboys. Oh, yeah, I was watching the Cowboys game and that came up. Or, oh, I saw an interview where some of the Cowboys did something. Can you talk about that connection?
Such a great connection. Coach Landry, way back in the day, knew my grandfather who founded the farm. He knew him through just Dallas social circles. My grandfather did some real estate while he was a pastor. And when he created Happy Hill Farm, Coach Landry came on our board, was chairman of our board for almost 20 years until he passed away. Wonderful man, loved the school. Got us connected with the Cowboys initially. Bob Brunig was a big part of that. Great man.
Yes, sir.
Still involved. And then when the Joneses bought the team, we continued that. And that grew into things like the Dallas Cowboys Wives Cookbook. Some of you listening may have one of those.
Yes.
Those were all over the Metroplex in the 90s and the early 2000s. We produced that and put a lot of information about Happy Hill Farm in that. We did the luncheon for almost 30 years, the Dallas Cowboys kickoff luncheon.
That's right.
And so many people went to that event through the years. And it's a good relationship. We're happy to be a part of that same platform to say, hey, in DFW, this is a great place that's caring for kids. So we're really appreciative of that support.
So let's talk about the big event this month that's going on with Happy Hills Farm.
Yeah. So like I've said many times throughout this, you know, a lot of people have driven past. A lot of people have a Dallas Cowboys cookbook on their shelf. They may think they know what's going on at Happy Hill Farm, but don't have a lot of opportunities to come out. And so we've created a way for you to come out and see Happy Hill Farm. It's going to be our Christmas market. We've got a building right by our front gate that you're going to be able to come to and essentially support the kids, meet some kids, learn more about Happy Hill Farm. If you want to buy some Christmas gifts for your family, we're going to have all the things that you would expect. A lot of them made by the kids. The art class has been going wild this year, making stuff, ornaments, and we'll be selling poinsettias and all that kind of stuff. And we're really excited about it. It's just a great opportunity. Open to the public, come out and see Happy Hill Farm, learn more about it. I'll be there. It's three weekends leading up to Christmas. The first weekend is November the 21st through the 23rd. Mm-hmm. The second weekend is December 5th through the 7th. And the third weekend is December 12th through the 14th. So if you want to learn more about the times and when it's exactly open, you can go to happyhillfarm.org, but I'll tell you the times that it's open right now. So every Thursday, it's 3 to 8. On Friday, it's 12 to 8. And on Saturday, it's 10 to 6. Not open on Sunday, just like Chick-fil-A. And so we'll be doing that. The 3 weekends, would love to have anybody out to learn more about Happy Hill Farm and support the kids.
You say it's a market, and you mentioned some of the items that they might be able to purchase for Christmas for their family or friends. Are there anything else going to be there? I'm just throwing it out there because I don't know. You can say yes or no. Food trucks, or you can buy some pies, or maybe there's a hayride. I'm just wondering because you guys are so amazing. I don't put nothing past you.
Well, let me tell you, what I failed to mention is probably what most of our donors and supporters are most excited about. We've been sending out cookies to our friends for years. You may have gotten some, Chris.
Yes, sir.
I mean, we've got a full bakery there at Happy Hill Farm, and it's been our kind of one of our main fundraising thank yous. Well, we've never sold them before until this year. So cookies, cakes, cupcakes, everything coming out of our really top tier bakery will be for sale. And so that's a big draw. I know we're going to have donors coming out for that. We're going to have some cool Cowboys autograph memorabilia. We're going to have, you know, I didn't mention some home decor and Christmas decorations and things like that. We're just really excited about it. We've never done anything like this. You know, most of the time the campus is open for open houses, which is about once a year, or volunteer opportunities. But this is, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to pay anything. Just show up, see what we're about, learn more. If you find something for your grandkids or your kids, we'd love for you to support the kids.
And all the information is located on, where's the website?
Yeah, happyhillfarm.org. There'll be a big banner at the top that says Christmas Market. You can click on that and it'll give you all the times and dates so you can make sure we're open. But excited to see anybody listening to this.
You know, I cannot let you go without asking you something about next year. We're talking about the holidays now, but next year is the official 50th year. Is there anything you can share with us about some of the things you might be doing for the 50th year anniversary?
I mean, it's incredible. It's a real blessing to be able to look back at that many years and thank God for faithfulness and all of the kids and wonderful employees. I mean, we're talking about 500 acres. We're talking about almost 100 employees just to run this thing. Mm-hmm. And they're fantastic. Want to give them a shout out. Our teachers, our resident parents, our administrators, our grounds guys. I mean, AAA people who really want to help the kids. They're there because they see it as an opportunity just to support those kids. And so we're excited to celebrate 50 years. We're going to have a big event next fall. Not given any details on that.
Right,
it's going to be a big celebration
next
fall. Get ready
for it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're excited about that. And then, you know, to go another 50 years, we really are interested in having a lot of conversations around estate giving. And so we're going to be talking to people a lot over the next 12 months about how to include Happy Hill Farm in your estate plans. A lot of people think estate planning is for the rich, and it's not. Estate planning is for everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody can help charitable causes with their estates when they're gone and see generation after generation change. And so we'll be talking a lot about that. We're looking forward to that big celebration we're going to have in the fall. And asking as many folks as possible to come out to this market to start to participate in our work with helping kids.
It's going to be so fantastic. Like I said, the next 3 weekends going up into Christmas, it's going to be fantastic to be there. You mentioned some of the employees and staff and who've been family that have been there forever. Do you still have some staff that were there in the 80s or the 70s or the 90s?
Yes. So I'll shout out the Browns.
There you go.
They were a third employees. Sylvia just retired. She was in charge of our bakery and food service from the very beginning up until about a year ago when she retired. Fantastic person. Absolutely love her. I mean, they are a real original Happy Hill Farm couple. And we've been blessed. The gentleman that took over for her has kept all of her recipes, which was really smart. And so the bakery's still running great. But I mean, for her to be able to do that for, you know, 48 years is just incredible. Some great people. Yeah, we're blessed.
Absolutely amazing. And in fact, for these weekends, I'm sure there's going to be former students coming through, family members of former students. Some of the former staff will probably come back by. I mean, everybody's welcome, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're excited to see a lot of faces that we know that we can hear more about, you know, the success that they've had in life. You know, I always get encouraged to get that email or that phone call. So it's a big deal.
Fantastic. Thank you so much again for joining us. Lucas, I can't thank you enough.
I appreciate it, Chris. Always good to be on, and look forward to next time, my friend.
All right. And thank you all for joining us on Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.